Hey, Bruiser Buddies, this is Wrestling Nostalgia with Dave Dynasty.
Before we dive into the episode, make sure you hit subscribe on the podcast platform you're listening on. Also, follow me on X at The Dave Dynasty and subscribe on YouTube by looking up Nostalgic Dave Dynasty. You can also buy one of my shirts at ProWrestlingTees.com/TheDaveDynasty. Now, enjoy the show.
Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings, wrestling fans, and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me for yet another episode. And on this one, my guest is former NWA and AWA Tag Team Champion and one half of the Bolsheviks, Boris Zukov. That talk is coming up in just a little bit. Hey guys, remember to check out the unboxing videos for the figures that were sent to me by the Nerd Closet, Figures Toy Company, and the KWK brand. So go check out my YouTube, give them a watch, and while you're there, be sure to subscribe to the channel. I hope that you also follow me on social media. I'm on all the platforms, and I post daily lots of historical WWE articles, show ads, pictures, and much, much more. So if you don't follow me on social media, you're really missing a lot of great stuff, so go check that out. All right, let's take a quick break, and when I come back, I'll have my interview with Boris Zukov. Phil Singer Games is a tabletop cards and dice game company that has enjoyed success for over three decades. Their first game was Champions of the Galaxy and was released in 1986. Champions of the Galaxy is a tabletop game that features professional wrestling over 100 years in the future. Humans, aliens, and monsters battle in the Galactic Wrestling Federation for belts. Legends of Wrestling features officially licensed wrestling cards featuring stars like Ted DiBiase, Jimmy Snuka, Harley Race, and many, many more, including game sets for independent promotions. Each match takes place in real time. The action is fast and furious, and all the things that happen in pro wrestling, like cage matches, outside interference, three-man tag matches, they also happen in the games. You have the opportunity to run your own wrestling promotion involving either real-life stars or fictional characters of the future, or you can mix and match both. Visit PhilSingerGames.com for more information and to order the games today. That is PhilSingerGames, PhilSingerGames.com to order now. If you like horror movies, be sure to check out Dave Dynasty and Ike Isaacs on the Listen to Their Screams Horror Podcast. It is available on all podcast platforms and on social media at Listen to Screams. That is Listen, the number two, and Screams. And welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by a former AWA and NWA Tag Team Champion and one half of the Bolsheviks, Boris Zukov. Sir, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very good. So let's talk about your career. Let's start. You played football in high school.
Yeah, yeah.
And while working out, you met Rick McCord. Is that correct?
With school and stuff, it was about a year. I graduated in June of 77, so I met Cord around, April, May of 1978. I was 19 years old. And I got introduced to him by a friend from my church and everything. And he was part of an independent group up in Salem, Virginia. In fact, a guy that I ended up working out with and became a real good friend, Mike Weddle, wrestling name Eclipso. He actually back then had a wrestling ring in his backyard.
Okay.
Yeah, so went up there and would work out there and stuff. But they had down in downtown Roanoke, they had a gym set up at the Roanoke City Market boxing arena down there. Boxing guy, the name was Rocky. I can't remember his last name. Had a boxing ring, and we'd go, and they took me down there and give me a tryout and everything. And boy, they really put me through the ringer my first night. I could hardly get out of bed on Saturday morning.
Yeah. Well, when you look up about your training, the names Don Hogan and Steve Savage come up. Who are those guys?
Yeah, Don, they were part of that back then. Don Hogan, Steve Savage, Eclipso, Rick McCord. Of course, Rick had been wrestling for a while. In fact, he'd gotten booked to go work for Nick Gulas in Nashville. Yeah. And Don Hogan and Steve Savage and Eclipso, they were all part of the same group out of Roanoke, Salem there back in them days.
Yeah, it's funny. I won't. It's odd that there's another couple guys named Hogan and Savage kind of worked.
That was really, really funny, you know, Don Hogan and Steve Savage. So, it's really funny. You know, when you look back at, I look back at all that history, you know?
Yeah. And Eclipso, he was prominent in that area for a long time, right? Cause you teamed with him like late in your, right towards the end of your career as well. Right.
I tagged with him there in the beginning, and then later on too, I had moved away and stuff, and they lived in Minnesota, then Florida, and Alabama. And then when I moved back home in 2001, we got a thing cranked up and started having matches in our local area here, down here around different places around Roanoke, and mostly down in Rocky Mountain, Virginia.
Not long after you kind of got trained, got started, you moved to Atlanta, began working something. Yeah. You started working under the name Jim Nelson.
Because my first name was James, so I went with Jim, and then I liked Art Nelson. Art Nelson was a big wrestler back then from Mid-Atlantic. He'd been tag team partners with Johnny Weaver, so I liked the name. I went with Jim Nelson when I first got started.
Yeah, and then around 80, when you moved to Crockett, that kind of started to become known as Private Jim Nelson.
Right, when Slaughter came in there at the end of 81, the beginning of early 82 and stuff, became Private Jim Nelson with led by Sergeant Slaughter.
Yeah, you were a member of his Cobra Corps. Right. And up till that point, this is kind of your first prominent position. So how did they... Tell me how that works. How did they approach you and come to you and say, hey, we want to put you in this group and push you, feature you a little more prominently. How does that happen?
I guess Sergeant had been talking with Ole Anderson. And then we had another booker, Louis Tillette was in the territory. And then they came to me about the idea of doing Private Nelson with Sergeant Slaughter and getting the Marine gear and uniform and all that, and got it started from there. So I'd go out to the ringside with him on TV and at the house shows, and have to take orders from Sergeant Slaughter. So that's how that all got started.
Yeah, and that had to be exciting, right? Because here you are.
Oh,
kind of getting your first definitely. Major exposure, right? I mean,
But it had been so great too. I mean, when I got started, it was so many, I was around all the very best wrestlers ever, you know, that, had so many years of experience and everything, you know, 300 and some days a year on the road and stuff. And, I couldn't have had better trainers and, coaches, than what I had back then with, Funks and the Briscoes and Ole and Gene Anderson and, Lars Anderson. I mean, they're just great guys.
Yeah, and one of those guys who's so underappreciated is Don Kernodle, who you started teaming with as part of the Cobra Corps.
Yeah, he was a great wrestler back then.
He was.
He wrestled in high school and college, and just a great guy, and he already had a lot of experience. Because when I first came to Charlotte and started wrestling there in '80, when I moved up from Atlanta, because Ole got me booked in Charlotte.
Yeah.
And got me started with George Scott there. I was getting work a lot of nights during the week with Don, because Don was a babyface, and he really taught me a lot. So that was great. That was great experience for me to get to work with Don back then.
Yeah, and you guys had two runs with the NWA tag titles.
Right.
And that just, again, that had to be so unreal for you, right? At that time, kind of young in your career, early in your career, team with Don Cardona. NWA right. tag title runs. I mean, you had to be kind of pinching yourself. That's a really a good spot to be in.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because I was pinching myself anyway, you know, because I was on the road every night and stuff. And, you know, getting to work with the greatest talent ever, you know. A lot of these guys I got to watch when I was watching them when I was going up through junior high school and high school, you know. Steamboat and Flair and the Briscoes and Johnny Weaver and so many of them, you know, Greg Valentine. I mean, it was Ole and Gene. It was fantastic.
Yeah, there's so many of those larger than life characters, wrestlers that are involved in wrestling. And one of them who's probably great.
And, because that was great, because that was my home territory, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Mid-Atlantic Wrestling, Jim Crockett, promotions. God, I used to remember going and watching Ole and Gene Anderson against Wahoo McDaniel and Paul Jones, you know.
Yeah.
And then some classic matches and stuff. So I had a lot of great coaching, you know, because the important thing was watching guys of that caliber, with that kind of experience, and learning from them, you know. And you couldn't watching matches real closely with guys like that, man. You learn something new every night.
Yeah, so. And you probably, you don't get much larger than life as far as a character or a wrestling personality than Sergeant Slaughter.
Oh, one of
the tops ever.
He'd already had a nice run already up in New York, you know, Vince McMahon Sr. and stuff and everything. And, you know, and then he came in down there in Charlotte and stuff, and it was just to get to be around somebody with him with that kind of experience and stuff, man, day in and day out and stuff. You're going to learn stuff, and plus you're in the ring, you know, 5, 6, 7 days a week. You know, sometimes that was be times you beg for a night off, you know. But that's how you learn stuff back then. You know, you were in that ring every day, every night. So.
That's right. That repetition.
Yeah. Oh, repetition. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and everybody, right? Everybody thinks of Sergeant Slaughter, right? Is this the big pro-American baby face, G.I. Joe. You know, that's what a lot of people envision, but he was so good. So good.
Oh, yeah.
As a heel.
Yeah, so big. A big raw bone guy and stuff, and take fantastic bumps. I mean, he was just, he was an incredible performer. And
yeah.
I learned a lot from him.
Yeah, and then around 83, you briefly, for a short stint, went to Mid-South.
Right.
And
that's when I got started doing Boris Zukov, because I finished up in Carolinas. I'd done that angle with the Briscoes where they broke my leg, and I left the territory, and then I went right to Mid-South for Bill Watts.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's right. Really, of course, important in your career, because you grew the beard, you shaved your head, you became Boris Zukov. And that totally sounds like a Bill Watts ideal. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, I'd talked to him. I'd been thinking about wanting to do something like that, because I'd been working on a gimmick and putting stuff together. And golly, I'd been practicing the gimmick voice, you know, from learned from Uncle Ivan when I was in when I was in junior high school.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Learn to talk like Ivan Kulov, you know.
That's right. That's your emulate, right? When you're learning that voice, that Russian accent, that it's Ivan.
Oh yeah. 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 That's right. Don't go to Ivan on it. And later on, I learned to do a little bit of the Chris Markov, you know, and then Nikolai and you know. So.
Yeah. Oh, they don't get any better than Ivan. I tell you what. So,
man, he was great to travel with, work out with, and Now I got to work against him. I got to tag team with him. So that was phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah, and for anybody that didn't grow up, or was a, of an adult age during that time period, portraying a Russian in 1983 had to be pretty intense.
Yeah, because we were very hated, the Soviet Union, and we shot that plane down and stuff. Yeah. And that was brutal.
Yeah, so when you say you had these ideals, and then Bill Watts comes to you, were you all on board at first? Did you have any hesitation of, ooh, this might be too much?
No, not really. I had thought a lot about it because I knew I was going to be leaving the Carolinas.
Yeah.
And I talked to Jake Roberts, because his dad, Grizzly Smith, was down there. So Jake called and talked to them and put a word in and stuff. And that helped me get my foot in the door and stuff. And I'd already knew Bill Watts. I'd worked some with Bill when he was booking in Atlanta. So we already knew each other. So that helped me out too.
Yeah. And I don't know anybody that wasn't alive during the 80s. Just, I mean, if you're a Russian character, a Soviet character, you're instant heat. It didn't matter. There were so many Soviet characters, some good, some bad, whatever, but they all had heat because of being Soviet. It was that intense.
The Soviet Union was so hated, So
It was just instant. And and like I said, you weren't in Mid-South a real long time, but you went to World Class.
I went over and worked the match with Bruiser Brody.
Yeah.
And had a good solid match with him and stuff. And Bruiser enjoyed it and liked it and liked me and put in a word with Fritz von Erich over there.
Yeah.
And then I got a chance to go work that territory over there with the Freebirds and Von Erichs, and man, that territory was red hot back then.
Definitely.
So
So
that was great. That was a great experience too. And especially getting to go work a territory like that.
Yeah. And again, good, really good exposure. It always seems like anytime there's something happening, right? There's a hot territory or there's a lot of exposure, whether it be, the Carolinas, whether it be Mid-South, whether it be World Class, the WWE, it always seems like Boris Zukov's hanging around. He's there.
Right.
you just seem to always be at the right place at the right time and have that opportunity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. And then that started getting toward Christmas time. I wanted to go home for Christmas and stuff. So I went ahead and finished up there. I'd gotten in touch with the Fullers and the Armstrongs down in Pensacola territory.
Yep,
I'd worked with them. I'd worked for them a few times in Knoxville back in the day, in between when I was up in Atlanta and back and forth. And I knew Bob Armstrong too.
Yeah.
So I got scheduled to start with them after Christmas there at the beginning of 1984 there in Dothan, Alabama. So man, what a great territory that was.
Definitely. And you had a good run there, right? You came into Southeastern there in 84. You had a different, in and out. But I do want to, part of your stay in Southeastern working for the Fullers was you had that short stint where you worked under a mask as Mr. Russia.
Yeah, I had left the territory because I'd lost the loser leave town match.
Yeah.
With Austin Idol.
Yeah.
And then a few months they worked an angle where I'd snuck back in and had the mask on.
Yeah.
So, that was fun too.
Yeah. So, I mean, done so many times, right? And you had a feud with Mr. Olympia and different things. What a lot of people who aren't used to it, they struggle wearing a mask. Did you ever have any trouble working under a mask?
No. I've done it a little bit. I know I worked a few matches for Memphis doing that. I had some experience, but yeah. In fact, I'd put it on at home and walk around in it and work and exercises, and way that helped me get used to it. Because some of the mask guys I'd met, and Bill Eady told me to try stuff like that, and Don Jardine,
the grappler,
that made a difference.
Yeah, I mean, because a lot of guys talk about the visitors, it's different visibility.
Yeah,
it's different. A different breathing. Whatever, it's different.
Right. It's totally different.
Yeah, yeah. That's wild that you actually prepared for that
and
trained for that.
I figured when I was going to be doing something like that, I get advice from the guys who've been doing it the best and the longest, and so that's when I talked with Bill Eadie, and where I got advice from Don Jardine too. So,
yeah, well, right. That's what a professional does, right? You
exactly.
Go to the experts, exactly. Get the advice.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because yeah. My gosh, they were. Every night in a mask, you know. So
That's right. You don't get much better than the superstar.
Right. Yeah. Right.
And one of the runs that you're probably most known for outside your WWE is when you went to the AWA in 85.
Oh yeah.
And when you went there, right, you were a regular challenger to Rick Martel and then Nick Bockwinkel and for the world title.
Right.
You challenged Sergeant Slaughter for the America's title, which is a natural feud there, right? The USA versus Russia.
Oh, yeah.
You were a very prominent player there in the AWA. And also, around this time, because I'm a toy guy. So around this time, the AWA became the first promotion to have action figures.
Right, right.
And they worked with Remco and had these figures. And Boris Zukov had a figure in this line.
Yeah, I sure did. Yeah. Me and, John Nord, Barbarian, and Sheik Adnan, you know. So, yeah. Yeah.
And that your figure is a very, it's a high value figure now. A lot of guys to find it in good shape with the singlet and the hammer and sickle on the forehead to have all that in good shape. You're a high demand action figure.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause they only made so many of them back then in certain parts of the country. And they're hard to find, and I think that had a lot to do with the value going up on them.
Definitely. So. And I just recently saw somewhere on social media, I don't remember which platform, there's someone that's a big-time action figure, wrestling action figure guy. I can't remember who it is. Doesn't matter.
Right.
Mentioned that one of their Holy Grail toys that they just recently bought was the Boris Zukov AWA Remco figure. And they were putting pictures of it, and it was so cool. It was cool to me because I knew I had this interview coming up and seeing that. And I thought, oh, that's pretty cool. And it is a very hard. I had a lot of the Remco figures back in those days, and I never had the Boris. It was very hard to find.
Right. And, they were.
Yeah, and even harder now. Do you on a side? Do you collect any of your own Boris Zukov stuff? Do you collect your own figures or anything like that?
Yeah, in fact. I have two of those. I have one in a package that's never been opened, and I have one that my Aunt Hazel had, it's out. I have it sitting out with Nikolai. So one that Nikolai had had. Nikolai gave it the one I have from Nikolai. He gave it to me.
Yeah.
So
of the AWA, do you have your AWA figure?
I sure do. Yeah, I have two of them.
That's what you're talking about then. You have an AWA Remco Boris Zukov in package.
Yeah, in a package. It's never been opened.
Oh, Boris. I know there was a sentiment of like, but man, you're sitting on some money there.
Yeah. So, and then recently I was able to get some a new one that somebody did of me, a company out of the UK. United Kingdom.
Yeah. You've all the way up to now, right? You've had some WWE figures over the years and everything else. You've got a, what they call, quote unquote, the retro Hasbro style, done by an independent toy. It looks really good. It's a really good likeness.
Right. They did a real good job on it. I got those here too.
Yeah.
So,
that's a figure I want. I haven't got it, but I really want one of those Boris Zukovs, those new figures. And, but at that time, back in 80, 85 ish, whatever it might be, though, that was a whole new thing. The action figure for wrestling was whole. It was new. AWA beat WWE to the market, WWF to the market.
Right.
At that time, when you find out they're making a figure of you and they're putting up that had to be, is it a hard concept at that time for you guys to grasp? Because it had never been done before, so it's peculiar, right?
Yeah, that was they Remco came and talked to us, and we signed a contract with them and all that, and it was really hard to to grasp what was going on, you know. So I would have never imagined nothing like that. So
yeah, because I mean, now everybody associates wrestling with action figures. It's just a natural thing.
Natural thing.
Yeah, to be the first it's weird, right? It's just,
oh yeah.
Someone had to be the first.
They had Zabisco and the Rockers. And,
yeah, they had all those guys.
All them guys.
Yeah.
Danya and all the Kurt Hennig. Larry the Axe, his dad, Larry the Axe.
Yeah.
A bunch of them. It was great.
Yeah. And while in the AWA, right, you got a lot of great exposure because AWA was on ESPN, which is a national cable company. A lot of us watched AWA daily. Almost daily on ESPN, and saw a lot of you.
Yeah.
And we
got some great exposure on that. Great
definitely,
exposure.
Yeah. And what I always remember Boris Zukov for the AWAs, right? You teaming with Soldat Ustinov.
Right.
And you guys beat the Midnight Rockers for the AWA tag titles. And then at Soldat, he was very green at that time, very early in his career. When obviously it's a Russian, it makes sense to be a team. Did Vern ask you to kind of mentor him? And to help him along?
Yeah. And in fact, asked me. And, of course, the baby faces we'd work with, a lot of them were helping him a lot, too. Kurt Hennig helped him a lot, you know, because they were both from Minnesota and stuff and everything. So, Greg Gagne helped him a lot. So, yeah, he definitely got some good experience and stuff up there. And then later on, Baron Rasky, Von Rasky, I helped him a lot too. So,
yeah, I always enjoyed Zola. Again, you could tell he was right, but I enjoyed it. He teed with T. Joe Kahn a lot. And I remember a lot of that. And I've talked to him recently, and he doesn't have a lot of fond memories of wrestling and doesn't like to talk about it. And that's his personal stuff or whatever. But I always enjoyed him. And I've always been a tag team guy, so I always enjoyed Boris Zukov and Soldat Ustinov, and it made sense.
Yeah.
But then you left the AWA around 87,
right.
And you guys hadn't dropped the tag titles, and you moved to the WWF. So tell me about that. How does that happen? How were you contacted, the discussion? How all of a sudden does Boris Zukov jump to WWF without dropping the tag titles? Is it a kind of a hot moment at the time?
Yeah, it was. Well, Jack Lanza, who'd been with the AWA, you know, one of the guys and all that there, got a hold of me because when the thing had helped me, or you know, was bad for the thing that happened when the incident happened with Iron Sheik and Jim Duggan, you know,
mm-hmm.
and she got in trouble and they had to let Sheik go. They was wanting bring somebody in to tag up with Nikolai.
Yeah.
And thankfully, being on AWA, getting a lot of exposure on ESPN and stuff. And then Jack Lanza put in a good word for me because he'd worked with me a lot in AWA. And he was an agent for Vince. He helped get, and Sergeant Slaughter had called and talked to Vince, too. And both of them helped get my foot in the door. So.
Yeah, and again, Jacqueline, you
and along and Sherry Martel was there, and so Sherry helped a lot too.
Sure, because Sherry was prominent in the AWA, and prior to that, and Jacqueline, you're speaking my language because I'm from Indiana originally, and you know, I love the Black Jacks, so Jack Lanza always holds a special place in my heart. A long time
Mulligan and Lanza, yeah,
yeah, long time agent for the WWF, And of course worked a lot of the AWA, so knew you, and that's that incident that came up where Sheik was let go. They needed something for Nikolai. They call Boris. When you notify Vern that you're making this jump, was he unhappy? What was his reaction?
When the word came from the WWF that I was going to get the opportunity, Vince was pretty much taking control of everything, and he didn't want them to know until I was already over there.
And
they knew my contract was running out.
Yeah.
So they didn't want me to say anything because they'd had some run-ins already because of Sean and Marty. The Rockers, because the Rockers had already gone over there.
Yep.
And they didn't want any issues. And so the night, the day my contract was running out, post have gone to a show, but I ended up going to Dallas and working for Vince that day. So I never said a word to any. The only person I talked to about it was Ray Stevens.
Gotcha.
I had a lot of respect for Ray Stevens. You know, I'd been with him in Charlotte territory, and I just loved Ray to pieces. I had a lot of respect for him, and he was the only one I talked to about it. And he says, Jim, sometimes an opportunity like that only comes along once. If you don't take it, you'll never get another chance. He says, if that's something you decide to do, I'll understand. And he didn't say nothing to anybody.
Yeah. So during this time, right, this few year period, it's very transitional for wrestling. And
right.
And Vince is growing just leaps and bounds constantly.
Yeah.
With you guys being within the business, you know, and Borisukov, a major player in the AWA, right? One of the prominent other promotions at that time. In your minds, did you guys know, hey, were you seeing, hey, Vince has got something going. This is hot.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
a lot of money to be made. Was that,
yeah.
I mean, was there that
yeah,
hope
like,
that
yeah,
maybe
the,
you could get there?
Yeah, the writing was on the wall because he was getting up all the talent. He was getting all the TV stations that he could and stuff. And I saw exactly what was going on. And I figured when I had a opportunity to go, I better go. Cause he was just eating everybody up.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
And, he was taking control of everything and stuff. And when he gave me the opportunity, I took it cause I'd learned that early on too and stuff. Cause that's not a business you can stay in forever.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you never know what your last day,
no,
you know, an injury,
no.
whatever else.
Any night could be your last night.
That's right. And, you know, and I'm a fan of the old school, the territorial days and all this and that, but, you know, I mean, I won't say I'm a Vince McMahon fan per se, but a lot of people always blame Vince for the death
right.
of the territories. But I always had the mindset that it was going to happen one way or another. Because
yeah.
TV was becoming national, everything was going national.
Everything was going national. The the local TV and all that was going away. Because like when I left Crockett's and went to Louisiana back in '83,
mm-hmm.
you know, nobody knew me down there because I'd been in the Carolinas for 3 years. You know, they saw me on Atlanta TV. It'd been a few years, but when all that TV started going national and stuff, because he was eating up all the local TVs and stuff, and his TV was growing and growing, so all that was going away. So I saw right through that. I said, man,
that's
it's,
right.
What it was when I got into it, it changed so much since '80, in 7 years was just unreal. How much and how fast it changed.
Yeah. And another thing that I've always found fascinating that you seem to kind of be ahead of the curve on. But as you were entering the NWWF, you legally changed your name to Borisukov.
Right.
Yeah. Did you have the foresight to know that you needed to protect that name and those rights of that name?
I had some of the other guys, you know, had talked to me and suggested it might be good for me to do that and stuff. And so that was something I decided to do. I know Honky Tonk Man has suggested to me, you know, if you protect yourself in any way, that'd be a good way to do that. So that's what I did.
Yeah, it's very it's kind of, like I said, ahead of the curve because a lot of people, right, have come and gone from WWE, couldn't use their names. Right, that they got that fame for, but because of that move, right, you were protected. You could always be Borisukov.
And I came, and even though I'd come in with that name and stuff, you know, and that's what helped me be able to get some other independent promotions that probably after I left WWF I couldn't have gotten because Vince was taking control of everybody's name.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah. And that's the same reason the Ultimate Warrior did the same thing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He
changed his. Yeah.
Yep. And it's again one of the first that I ever recall being ahead of the curve on that. And again, we talked about a couple of your runs that you're most known for. And this is right? The WWE run, WWF run, probably what you're most known for. You started, like we said, the Iron Sheik gets fired. They need someone with Nikolai. You come in, you start teaming with Nikolai as the Bolsheviks. That's what most people remember Boris Sukov from, because of the exposure.
Right. Yeah. Because the exposure with WWF was just off the charts.
It was. Incredible. And Nikolai, he had been around for a long, long time prior to this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I met Nikolai back when I first started, because when I was in Atlanta, I went different places like Knoxville to do TV and a house show and stuff. And I did the same thing for the Tampa office. Yeah. I went down to Tampa and stuff, and then and worked their towns down there in Tampa and Tampa TV and all that. And so I got to meet Nikolai back then. And then when I was in Mid-Atlantic, he came in and tagged up with Chris Markoff.
Yeah,
and they was managed by Lord Alfred Hayes.
Yeah,
so I got to meet all them guys back then. So I was around Nikolai a lot through the years there. So we already knew each other.
Yeah,
so that helped a lot too.
Yeah, I mean Nikolai obviously goes back right to a Mongol. Again, went through Mid South. Just was around a lot.
Right,
and had lots of success and everything else. So when you're coming into WWF at that time, you're going to team with Nikolai. Was that exciting for you to know? You already met Nikolai, you already knew Nikolai, but here's this guy who'd been around, and you get a team with him. That had to be kind of fun, right?
Oh yeah, that was very exciting, you know, because he was fun to travel with and everything. And golly, when we was close to home and stuff, Maryland and stuff, he'd drive his car, he'd bring a hot plate from home. We'd cook our meals in the room, because a lot of times we had to cook like and eat more privately because of the gimmick back then.
Right.
It was hard to go into restaurants and not be harassed, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. And so. you talk to so many people, right? And you don't hear an unkind word about Nikolai.
He was so much fun, and he was always pulling ribs on people and doing card jokes and making people laugh and stuff.
Yeah.
And everything. He was, he was the same way in the ring. And so I realized the stuff he'd do out there to get people going, the boys going in the ring, and fans never knew what was going on.
That's right.
It was hard to keep a straight face around Nikolai sometimes.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. And you and Nikolai, right, you teamed for quite a while. You faced everybody that came to the WWE at the time. Did you have, and I don't mean this, no knock on anybody else, but did you have any teams that you really enjoyed working with, or that you seemed to gel with really well during that time period, maybe a bit more than the others?
Well, I always enjoyed working with Jock and Raymond Ruggio, the Hart Foundation, Powers and Roma, young stallions and stuff.
Yep.
I mean, I personally enjoyed working with all of them and stuff, because it's just great experience. You know, Tito Santana and Rick Martel.
Oh yeah,
Strike
Force
and stuff. Yeah, that was just phenomenal guys to work with, because they were so experienced, and all of them were over. Jim Brunzell and Brian Blair.
Yep.
You know, I loved working with them guys. I've worked with both of them through the years anyway. So the Killer Bees is a tag team. They were a lot of fun too.
Yeah, I've always been a huge tag team fan. That was such a good period for tag team wrestlers. So many good teams.
And, then later on got to work with Bill, you know, Bill Eadie and Barry Darso, Demolition. They were a lot of fun. Of course, and later on, I'd worked with Mike and Joe, the Road Warriors, and AWA.
Oh, yeah.
So when they came there, I got to work with them too and stuff. So it was always fun working with them, because me and Joe would always do that press slam all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and during this time, right, you faced everybody and got, you know, lots of prominent spots. But, you know, to be frank, you guys didn't have a lot of success in ring during this run, but you know, that is what it is. But did you ever feel frustrated? Was there ever any talk about doing more with you, or were you kind of comfortable in your role and your place in the card and the fact that you're making pretty good money and it is what it is?
Yeah. Well, I was making good money, you know, and I mean, I tell people all the time, you know, when me and Nikolai get our booking sheets, the first thing we'd look at is where's Hulk Hogan. You know,
right, yeah.
If you knew if you was on Hulk shows were going to be sold out. And yeah. Hulk shows being sold out. Get a good payoff, but yeah, we get good spots on the card and stuff, you know. And there were several times we got to be in a six man and I think a regular tag match with Hulk, and yeah. then I got to do that single one with Terry on Saturday Night Main Event, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was phenomenal. We was in New Haven, Connecticut when we did that, and that entire building was shaking.
Sure.
I mean, you got in a ring with Hulk. It wasn't like getting in a ring with anybody else.
Yeah.
He was so over.
Yeah.
That it was, man, it was just, the people just went nuts over him. Absolutely
yeah.
nuts. And then anytime we wrestled in Philadelphia, that was that in Boston were two of our favorite towns. We had so much heat in those towns. Me and Nikolai, we was lucky to get out of them a couple of times. And
yeah.
it didn't matter if you lost or not. They hated us so bad. We would just tell them, tell the people that you cheated, you didn't beat us fair and square, and they were ready to kill us again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the Soviet Union just had so much heat, man. Everybody hated the Soviet Union.
That's right. Yeah. And it's nice, you know, because again, I don't watch a lot of modern wrestling, but I don't want to knock them per se, but it's nice when guys have a full picture on the business, right? Not everybody can main event, right? There has to be different places on the card.
Right.
And that doesn't mean even you can lose every match and you can still get yourself over.
Yeah. You know, the thing was with me, man, is it was such an honor and pleasure and a blessing. Praise the Lord that I had the opportunity to get into business. My main thing was to stay healthy and stay booked every day.
That's right. That's how you made money.
I could stay healthy and stay booked, I would make money.
That's right.
Because it's all a show.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, to me, it's no different than if I'd have been a character on a TV show.
Sure.
You go play your character, you hope and pray you can stay healthy so you can be in the ring the next night. Because some guys got hurt, started getting hurt, and then next thing you know, they're having to get out of the business.
Yeah.
So because. We were making such good money back then. To me, I didn't, not having to carry a tag belt around was fine with me because I was getting good pay anyway.
That's
it didn't
right.
matter to me.
That's right. It's just a gimmick, right? It's just a
It's just a gimmick, man.
That's
it's all it is a gimmick.
Yep.
So,
and as things in history progressed, right, the Soviet Union started splitting up. It was only natural that. That at some point, right, this would bleed over a little into the Bolsheviks, right? Nikolai turns face.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. That's when Vince had the idea about me turning on Nikolai at that WrestleMania and stuff, you know, because it was going along with what was happening in the world anyway, you know, with the thing, the big fallout with Gorbachev and Reagan and the Iron Curtain coming down, which I never thought I'd see in my lifetime.
Right.
I mean,
they've
been. It'd been such horrendous, you know. I'd learned all that stuff in school anyway.
That's right.
Nobody imagined anything like that happening, you know.
That's right.
Yeah. But I'll tell you what, I'd laugh. I'd tell Jim and Bret Hart, I said, golly, Ned, I didn't mind that being a short match. I got the same payday as if we'd gone 20 minutes.
That's right.
Short and sweet.
That's right. You're not paid by the hour, right?
right. Exactly.
Yeah. I always loved it because, again, we talked about Nikolai, how long of a career. I always thought it was really, really nice that he got that little face run.
Yes. Yeah.
He got to hear the, you know, the people rally, but it was just
because,
a nice thing for him.
Yeah, he eventually started singing the Star Spangled Banner, which
thought
was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and had the American flag and stuff. I really wish they would have tagged him up more with Jim Duggan, and got another partner and got another run, because him and Duggan were great together.
Definitely.
With all the charisma that Duggan had, the people just loved them guys.
Yeah.
But what was funny, we did that match with the Hart Foundation in Toronto at WrestleMania, that quick match and stuff. We went to do the finish. Bret was goofing off. And Jim had picked me up and everything, and I was pretty heavy at the time.
Yeah.
And Brett's playing around, and I'm starting to slide down. Jim's screaming, Brett, and the people didn't know this. Brett, would you come on? He goes, I'm gonna drop him. I was sliding down, and I was having trouble holding myself up because me and Jim were sweating pretty good off.
Yeah, that's right. About,
yeah.
The weird stuff that you don't.
Oh, that, if people only knew, you know.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, if Brett would have waited too much longer, he'd have been hitting me with that clothesline at the top of my head instead of in my chest.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Brett and Jim, and that face of his with that beard.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I was looking at Jim and I started laughing. I had to bury my head, put my head down. And I was laughing so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And well, not long after that little run with Nikolai, after he turned, you left the WWF around, you know, 1991, excuse me, early on.
Right.
Was there a specific reason you left, or was it just kind of things were shifting? They were starting to go in a new direction.
Yeah, they were shifting. I think I figured, Vince kind of like had an idea, and I kept getting to thinking he might try to get me to do some other gimmick, and I didn't want to do another gimmick. I just wanted to go ahead and leave. So
yeah.
So I decided to do that because I was able to get some good independent runs the next year, and it was a blessing that that door closed like it did, you know, because that's things happen like that in life, you know. Sure. One door closes, another door opens, you know. So I had a good year or so of 91, and then 92 came around. That's when I got in the trucking business.
Yeah, which so, you did that for many years as well, right?
Right, yeah, yeah, 32 years. So, yeah. And, you know, I did independent shows off and on up to 2013, and that was my here with Eclipso here in local here in Virginia, and in fact Rocky Mountain was Virginia is where we did a lot of some training. We had to move that gym back when I got started in 79 there. They had to move the boxing gym down to Rocky Mountain. Mm-hmm. So I started doing a lot of training in Rocky Mountain, so I was able to finish up where I had been doing a lot of training back in when I first got started. So
yeah,
that was kind of brought it full circle, you know.
Yeah,
so that was absolutely that was pretty cool.
Yeah, so. And well, a couple things. Right, first of all, trucking, right? Kind of a perfect second act for a wrestler.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
still on the road, still out there. You're used to that lifestyle.
Yeah, because there was a few other guys that did that. You remember Frank Monty with the Alaskans?
Yeah, yeah.
Frank Monty became a truck driver.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I got to see him one day out there, but I didn't get to him to speak to him. He was in his truck, and Sweet Hansen had done some truck driving back in the day. So, you remember Carl Fergie?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. He wrestled a lot in Atlanta and different places, and he was some in the Carolinas too.
Yeah.
Carl Fergie got in the trucking business.
Yeah,
so
it's almost perfect, right? I mean, you're used to being on the road, not a lot of interaction with people.
Yeah.
Works
and
out just
that
right.
Can help me keep a lot of my memories alive because I'd go around and get to see a lot of the old venues and
that's
stuff
right.
You know,
yeah.
that I worked at and stuff, and it was pretty cool. So, and I'd run into fans of people who remember me wrestling in Norfolk and Hampton and, at the buildings down there, so different places. So that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so, and you talked about, you know, kind of winding it down to 2013 and still back, you know, in Virginia doing, you know, some of, I mean, like you said, a couple of those same guys doing some you know, things.
Yeah. And in fact, back in the day, Mid-Atlantic Wrestling would have wrestling at the Franklin County High School. Well, mm-hmm. we still got Franklin County High School here. So we had our own matches at Franklin County High School too.
There you go.
And when I got to wrestle for the Crockett's back in the early 80s, we'd come to Franklin County and have matches there. So a lot of great, and that's where I live. I live near Rocky Mount, Virginia. So that's a lot of great memories for me. So,
sure. Yeah. Yeah. And not only that, right? Late in that independent run, you got to bring Private Jim Nelson back for a bit and everything else. So everything was very full circle. It really felt like you were closing the doors.
Yeah. I got to bring Don and Wally Canodal come up for, a couple shows. We brought in Johnny Weaver. We had Sandy Scott lived up in Roanoke, so Sandy would come down. He'd kind of be like a head assistant with us, you know, or consultant and stuff. So that was great having Sandy Scott around too. So
When you finally decided to hang it up, did you just feel, oh, it's time? I've done what I need to do. So be it.
Right. Yeah, I'd done all I wanted to do, and like I said, I didn't want to end up with any bad injuries or anything, because like I said, I got started there in 78, and I ended up in 2013. So for me, that was a good run.
Yeah, definitely, right? A nice long run, and it's still exciting because, right, you're still kind of in the public eye, right? You do some appearances. You've had some action figures recently, like we've talked about, and everything else. What else would you like to do? What's next for Boris Zukov? Would you like to do a book, a documentary? What else would you like to do?
Like I said, I get contacted to go do I was just down in Charlotte at the gathering a while back and stuff. And down there, that was a lot of fun. So, I get to do a few more of those because I get to see the boys, you know.
Sure.
So that's always a lot of fun and all that. Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, I'm a big book guy. Any chance we'll ever see a Boris Zukov book?
I'm not really interested in writing one. I wish I had kept up with had wrote down all this stuff through the years, you know. And I didn't keep up with all the miles, and you know, I should have wrote a lot of stuff down, because I know I've forgotten a lot of stuff. I mean, I got a lot of big stories in my head of stuff that happened, you know, different places and all that. But I got to meet some great people. Me and Nikolai got to meet Michael Landon at a TV thing down in Houston. Back when he was putting Highway to Heaven into syndication and stuff.
Yeah,
got to meet people from Leave It to Beaver and. The guy that played Eddie Munster got to meet him. I got to meet Chuck Connors, you know, from Rifleman.
Yep.
So I got to meet some neat people. Yeah. So
very exciting life. Probably more than you could ever have thought.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and again, you're still out there doing a few appearances here and there. Do you have any way for fans to follow you to keep track of where you're going to appear? Do you do social media at all?
Very little. I did a little bit I keep up with stuff on YouTube and stuff, you know. I'm not on Facebook or nothing like that and stuff, you know. So, but I have people that have my different guys get a hold of me, you know, with contact information for different places and stuff, because I did one up in New York and New Jersey last year. This past year, I got to go up there and do an appearance up there, which was a lot of fun because I hadn't been up there in a long time.
Yeah.
So,
it's very exciting. Boris, I thank you for your time. And again,
thank you for your time. And thank you for all your knowledge on that.
Man. Sure.
It's so easy to follow, because you was right on top of everything I had done. So,
well, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that.
Absolutely. That good. I'm glad to hear that. And it's such an honor to talk to you, and hopefully maybe we can cross paths again and do a part two down the road and talk a little more.
Oh, absolutely.
All right. Well, have a good weekend coming up, Boris. And again, I'll stay in touch with you via email, and maybe we'll cross paths again.
All right. Sounds
all right.
Good.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Das bedanje, tovarish.
Hey ho, everybody. Subscribe to the Pinhead Pod, the Ramones fan podcast, bringing you interviews, news, deep dives, and much more. Look it up on your favorite podcast platform. That is Pinhead Pod.
Available on all streaming platforms. It's professional wrestling's greatest, largest, privately owned wrestling library. All the classic hits, flips, slams, and pins of yesteryear are on one place. It's Ultimate Classic Wrestling. Check out the Nature Boy Ric Flair, Hulk Hogan, Mr. USA Tony Atlas, Tito Santana, Rick Martel, a who's who of professional wrestling's greatest spotlight stars ever to grace the squared circle all in one place. Grab the best seat in the house for memories and mayhem on Ultimate Classic Wrestling.
Hey guys, Ray Russell here. Lots of new stuff happening here at WrestleCopia. If you haven't checked out our website at WrestleCopia.com, it's a great way to keep up with the latest episodes of all of your favorite Copia programming, from the Wrestling Memory Grenade to Regional Wrestling with the Territory Talk, the Wrestling Stoop with the legendary Bob Roop, and of course all of those programs also available at your favorite podcast streaming platforms. And if you want to stay up to date with everything going on in the Copia world, all the latest news, random thoughts, fun videos, pictures, and more, make sure to join the more than 33,000 followers over at facebook.com/wrestlinggrenade. Don't be left out. And last, but definitely not least, it's what keeps the entire machine going. I'm talking about patreon.com/wrestlecopia. We appreciate your support in helping us pay the bills to keep the WrestleCopia Podcast Network running and enabling us to continue to bring you all the quality programming that we offer.
Okay, and thank you to Boris for coming on and doing that interview. What a fun conversation that I had with him. Guys, let me remind you one more time. Follow me on social media. I'm on pretty much all of the platforms. Just look for Nostalgic Dave Dynasty or at The Dave Dynasty, and you can find me usually really easily. Be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, like I said earlier, for lots of classic wrestling content, plus all of my various podcasts are there. Also, go check out all of the WrestleCopia Network podcasts. You can find the individual shows on your favorite podcast platform, or you can visit WrestleCopia.com. Also, be sure to check out my friends at the Ultimate Classic Wrestling Library. Visit ClassicWrestling.net to sign up for your account, and then download the app on all of your smart devices. Next episode, my guest is going to be Joe Smith, the son of Bulldog Don Kent. We're going to remember his father and talk about the career of one of the most underappreciated wrestlers in history. So don't miss that. Guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening. Thank you always for all your support. And remember, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Man. We brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Manager thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.